How much time? 30 seconds. I'm on right now. I don't believe you. What?
You're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
All right, we're on.
Ready, Phil?
We're on in 5, 4.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Just a small town girl, living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere. Just a city boy, born and raised in South Detroit. He took the midnight train going anywhere.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you with us tonight, everybody. We got a big show for you. Fun show tonight. A little bit different than where we normally take this, as we're not going to talk about players or... Well, we'll talk to a player, I guess, but not about players and not about... the stats and numbers and teams and COVID and all that kind of stuff, although I'm sure we'll get some mention of that virus in here. But tonight we got a big show because it's going to be all about Hockeyville, about Kraft Hockeyville. As we saw St. Adolph go into Kraft Hockeyville as one of the finalists, emerge as one of the three towns that didn't quite make the cut, as they fell a little bit short in terms of the voting, but still they get $25,000 from Kraft in terms of making improvements. So tonight we want to meet the woman, sort of the face of Kraft Hockeyville, and the application that the town of St. Adolph put in Lori Stoddy. Lori, how are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. I guess the big start is how is everything going now that Kraft Hockeyville sort of wound down and you guys are getting back to normal?
Yeah, and I can just take a minute to breathe. It is good. It's pretty cool that something like hockey could create such a big buzz and a big uniting feeling amongst a whole town of people, right? This is 1,600 people, and not everybody plays hockey, unfortunately. They should, but they don't. And it still brought them out, right? Like, they're coming out of the woodwork left, right, and center going, we need this building for hockey and for more than just hockey. And it's just been so cool just focusing on the sport of hockey and how, we want to get these kids back on the ice. We also have ringette out of our lovely community club and arena, and public skating, and just people lacing up skates in all sorts of places. So yeah, I'm feeling like I'm a little disappointed that the whole big prize didn't go to our community club and arena, because of course we have tons of projects that need attention, but it did go to a very deserving community. And you're right, we still did get $25,000 to put into our arena, and an extra 10 grand actually in equipment from the Goals and Dreams Foundation, which is pretty awesome too. Yeah, we can get some new jerseys or something. Be good.
I mean, obviously it's nice to see, you know, crowd come together and certainly the town come together and really sort of push this. Did you expect the outpouring of support that you guys got though? I mean, it seemed like everybody, and I'm not going to say, you know, everybody under the sun, but certainly a lot of people across Canada, certainly Manitoba was all in, it seemed like, for you guys. Some big names as well. Team Einarsson got behind you guys. Team Mussolini was behind you guys. I mean, obviously it's kind of nice to have sort of that kind of support rallying the troops. Did you expect that kind of response when you put the application in for this?
No, I got an email from the minor hockey president. I'm just a parent in the community. I play hockey in the community. I volunteer on a lot of different aspects of the community. I'm like a manager for hockey. I'm a coach for soccer, and, you know, just sitting at home watching a Jets game and that commercial runs across the screen. I just gotten an email from the minor hockey president saying that our ice plant is broken. We're not going to be having hockey for the rest of the year, no matter what COVID does. And we've also got a big mold issue in the wall. And I'm like, well, this is the year, I guess, to apply for Kraft Hockeyville. And little did I know that when you apply for such a giant Canadian competition, would it be so all-encompassing for the entire town and all of our time and all of these volunteers coming out of the woodwork. It was just, it was an amazing experience, but it was definitely big. it's one of those things where you do it, and then after you look back and you're like, wow, in hindsight, that was a really big undertaking. And I didn't realize it until later. Just trying to get all the support and get the word out there and advertise for ourselves. Like, we need you to vote, because the whole thing came down to votes, the number of votes. And right. You could vote an unlimited amount of times. And so we just needed that word out there. Yep, vote, and vote till your finger bleeds, I think was my saying by the end of the rally phase. Yeah, it was announced back in March, and then we had 20 days to tell people all about it. And somebody sent that cameo thing to Timu Solani, and he actually picked it up, which was really cool, right? He's in sunny California, as he says in the video, and he still cared enough to pick it up, say the message, send it to us. And then after we posted it, he DM'd us on Instagram and said, I noticed, like, because we tagged him, right?
Yeah.
So he said, I noticed you put my video up. Good job. Good luck to you. Thank you for doing that kind of thing. We're like, what? We thank you. That's pretty great that you made that video for us. And the Jets were getting on board with us, which was awesome to see, just tweeting about us or posting stories on Instagram and getting the word out there. There are tons of places in Manitoba, actually, that reached out, different levels of government and different townspeople sending us pictures of their posters up at the schools in their towns. Or Stonewall, Manitoba, had done a giant sign of please vote for St. Adolph as you drove into their town. One of those like electronic ones.
Yeah.
Just lots of different levels of support. It was pretty amazing to see. It's cool that hockey just really unites people.
I mean, I don't know. Again, I've never done it. I don't know what goes into it. I don't know how much effort goes into it. You wrote the application for Craft Hockeyville. What, I mean, I know the call out was there. I saw it on Facebook about you guys asking for, you know, ideas and stories and submission. What exactly goes into the application when you're applying for something as big as Craft Hockeyville?
Well, I did the initial one. So you just have to sign up your arena, which I did, and then submit the story, which is like 1,000 words or something. It might even just be 1,000 characters. So it's just three tiny paragraphs of like why hockey is so important to your community and what would you do with this money? Like, why do you need $250,000? Let me tell you why I need $250,000.
Right, yeah.
So I ended up just actually calling the original guys who built the arena. I just wanted to get a sense of like, when did this go up and why and how? This is such a, this town was established in 1857, but the arena didn't go up until, well, it was an outdoor arena in the 80s. And then the actual indoor arena part was 1992. So I just asked how that all came to be and then wrote the whole story. So it was the first post to go up on the Craft Hockeyville website. And then from there, I told my fundraising committee about it and said, like, I just applied, but I just read all the rules. And it says that we need to make a lot of noise on their website and have more stories and more photos and more notes. And like, it's just a big social media thing, right? So they put out the call, Facebook, Instagram, everyone started talking to their friends. And then before you knew it, within 2 weeks, we had 1,300 posts about why our arena is so important to us and why we need this money. And it was a really powerful experience just because Craft Hockeyville starts January the 1st. They put out the call to say, hey, you want your community to be entered? Then here you go, write a story, take some pictures. And then they close on February 14th. So essentially every community has a month and a half to get everybody on board and write stories and do all that. And we didn't apply till February 1st because we didn't know our ice plant was broken. We didn't know about the mold in the wall. We didn't know that we needed all of this money all at one time. So as soon as I wrote it and submitted it on February 1st, everybody started. We only had 2 weeks and we made enough noise in the 2 weeks, I guess, and put enough stuff up there. And the need was great enough that they picked us as the top four, which was great, 25 grand. And it was a really fun experience. Yeah. And just really cool to see the whole community going, yeah, we need to fix this building. It's really important to us, you know, hockey and beyond. It's very cool.
I mean, that is super awesome that, I mean, you guys got picked and you were one of, you know, sort of the first one in the pool and they picked you, which is kind of cool in terms of just seeing how things are working anyway, in terms of, you know, them adjudicating and finding out who needs what and how far they're willing to help in terms of getting things back on even keel for everybody. But I mean, again, there's a pile of stuff that needs to be done from what I understand. Obviously the ice plant has to be replaced. The mold has to be replaced. There's, you know, other things that you guys want to see, you know, either changed or improved, or certainly some stuff that'll go along with it. Maybe that's not so directly related to the rink part, but I mean, again, what are you guys looking to do in terms of getting the arena going? Like, what do you need to be able to put teams back on the ice basically?
Ice plant So well, we are taking that 25 grand, sticking it to the ice plant. It's still not enough. Like even after we have submitted Craft Hockeyville, we've also been writing grants and figuring out other ways to fundraise. Cause it's, you know, we didn't want to put all our eggs in one basket and just be like, yes, Craft Hockeyville, let's just bank on getting this big money. So since then we've been receiving word on grants or insurance coverage for partial plant coverage. So we have some money from that. But again, even with the craft money and some insurance, we still are like $20,000 short just for the ice plant repair. That's not a replacement, just a fix. Like, so it's just killing us. But anyway, that and the wall right now is, it does have the plastic sheeting. So it is safe to be in there in terms of like the mold and the air quality. We had a company come in and test, but it's still something we need to address and we want to fix that. But ice plant is the main one that will get our feet back in skates and back on the ice. And then from there, we need to expand some dressing rooms. Our population has grown significantly in the past 5 to 10 years. Like in the past 5 years, we've grown 20%. When they originally built the arena, there weren't a lot of women playing hockey or girls at the time. There were finally by the mid to late 90s. But originally when they were planning this whole thing, it was just like four quick change rooms, whatever. And so now we have females as part of the men's teams, right? Like they're mixed and they come and we don't have anywhere to put them. And so we just kind of say, well, here, you can go in this change room with the home team. And so then the home team and the away team women are all changing in the same room. Or we have this little cold room under the stairs out in like the cold part, just change under the stairs. Like it's just, yeah, that's our next, we need some money for dressing rooms as well.
I'm glad you brought that up because I mean, the 20% growth in hockey in St. Adolph has been sort of, you know, something I don't think people realize is that 119 players were registered for hockey in 2019-2020, which, I mean, again, that doesn't sound like a lot of players, but for a town of, you know, 1600 people, I mean, that's basically 10% of the town.
This year,
there.
But 2020-2021, like this year we had 170 registered. Okay. Yeah. Minor hockey. Like that's under 17-year-olds, right? Like, and that doesn't include the mom's league or the grandpa shinny league we got going and all the men's leagues. I think there's a men's league playing every single night of the week in our town. Like it's a busy building.
And I mean, 34, you know, in 2019, 2020, anyway, 34 kids were between the ages of 4 and 6. So you guys are obviously starting young and pushing on and getting everybody of all ages in there. 36 of those 119 players were girls, which is awesome in terms of the ratio that we're seeing and certainly shows great growth there. I mean,
yeah.
We're talking about, you know, I don't want to say this, you guys sort of need a whole sort of makeover to the whole arena. But I mean, the idea is that if you can get at least players back on the ice, then there's a chance to make some money and really start, you know, expanding outward with the rink. I know that you said, you know, it's still $20,000 away in terms of just getting the repairs done and that kind of stuff. What are you guys doing now? What are the plans going forward to maybe raise that money and get that going?
So we've got, of course, lots of COVID-friendly ideas in the works. So we have like a million ideas that we want to do, and then COVID just says no to most of them. So
right, yeah.
Of course, when the restrictions are lifted, we have all sorts of grand ideas. But for right now, trying to think of ways that we can safely fundraise, we're thinking of like more of a virtual Chase CA, starting that up eventually. We've had several community members come forward and say, can I run a 50-50? So I guess virtually would be the 50-50.
Right. Yeah.
One of our friends in town has her own graphic design company. So she started designing St. Adolph like merchandise and just to sell on our community page, which is nice. And a portion of like the hoodie that you buy goes towards the community club. So that kind of fundraiser type thing. And we've started like kind of a GoFundMe, but it's a different platform. It's called Amelia and you can donate that way. I think we're up to $3,500 now. With
23 people at 37.35 right now. So yeah,
oh, you guys 37.
Are,
oh,
yeah, you guys are up doing well anyway for the
start.
That's
awesome.
So yeah,
that's lovely. Oh, that's great to hear. Thank you for the update. The few businesses too, like locals have stepped. I know McMahon and Yates has kind of stepped in and said, we've got some building supplies, and there's been a mold and restoration company that's come forward to say, can we help with the wall, taking down that part of the wall and some drywall installation. And it's just different parts of society have started to emerge and say they'd like to help. And so we've got a few things on the horizon, but it's definitely hard with COVID, right? Like just you have to constantly pivot and like, now what? And the restrictions I hear are you going into even more restrictions maybe this weekend and like what's that going to look like? And oh my goodness.
So I mean,
it's been a trip.
I mean, one of the things that I again, just doing the research and looking up information about St. Adolph and ways things had sort of gone in the past, community calendars seem pretty popular. Are you guys going to be doing that again coming up?
Oh, yeah, we sell that. That's right. Every beginning of every hockey season. So right. It has every, it's cute. Everyone in town's birthday or anniversary date who wants to be on it is on it. And then you sell the calendar for about $20 a pop and just, you know, goes in the kitchen or whatever of each home. And then you know exactly when so-and-so's birthday is down the street. It's very cute.
I mean,
and we sell those. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that's a great idea, to be honest. I mean, to have that sort of community connection with everybody. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a really cute little idea. That's right. We do the calendars. And we used to do like a social every February. We have a huge carnival with like kids games and like, you know, those bouncy castle houses thing, all stuff that's not COVID friendly, of course. So we're on hold for that. We've lost probably $60,000 in revenue just from not doing anything because of COVID, as most people have lost something during COVID, right? Like your job or finances are tough, but that definitely with our community club, that's a big chunk of our, our revenue is fundraising. So it's been different. It's been a different year, which is why we thought it was a good year to fly for craft hockey, though.
No, and I mean, that makes total sense. And if you're missing that much, you know, that, and again, that's a large chunk of change. I mean, that is $60,000 you can't really make back in a year. So, no. I mean, getting that craft hockey bill money would have easily replaced that, which would have been nice. I mean, again, you get a portion of it back with $25,000. So no complaints really with, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing to sneeze at.
Right. The pennies from heaven are always nice to have at that point. I got to ask now, because I mean, I think this is something that we really need to, that I don't think people took into consideration. I don't think people maybe understood, is that where are the teams playing if the arena can't be used right now? Like, where is everybody sort of using ice time if they need it?
Yeah, our minor hockey association, well, just like our community club, they're all volunteer run. But so they started to call around to the different towns that surround us to ask if they had any spare ice time that we could maybe farm out our teams. And the ones that came back to us were a good 45-minute drive, an hour drive away. So we just, as a community, came to the conclusion, well, we're just not playing hockey right now then. I mean, I'm not driving an hour for my Timbits practice, which is 45 minutes long. And I don't know. We just were like, oh, well, I guess we won't have hockey for the rest of the season. So we just canceled the whole thing because there's like ice time is at a premium and we really couldn't get what we needed to fit our size of hockey program in towns that were close. And we, okay, well, we'll just, we'll fix that ice plant and get back on there hopefully for next October, I guess, would be when we start.
I mean, I hope that happens because I mean, obviously, you know, there's lots of kids there that want to play. 170 is.
Oh, it's not of, just the kids that were like, well, yeah, wait, we didn't win.
They were like, we're all just big kids when we're on the ice though, right? So.
Well, no, I think the moms were more upset when we didn't get the money to fix the ice plant. I think the kids were like, there's no hockey. And the moms were like, wait a minute, there is no social hockey on Sunday? Like this, no. And we were very upset. And this is our outlet, right? Like you, a lot of things have been taken away because of COVID. We used to meet to be on different committees or volunteer for things. And now it's all through Zoom and you're kind of stuck in your house. So this was our like, hey, see you on Sunday on the rink. And we play hockey and then we stick around for a drink or two in the dressing room. Or lately it's been in the parking lot because it's COVID. So we just bring our camping chairs. It's winter and we're sitting in a giant circle in the parking lot after hockey. So we could all have our social time. So yeah, we were really disappointed. All the moms in town when they said, there's no more hockey this year. Like that's a big piece of our social life and some exercise, I guess.
I mean, let's not throw that part away. I mean, you play, like you said, I mean, you're part of that team that sort of gets together and everything. How did you get into it? What sort of drew you to come and play hockey after not playing, you know, virtually all your life?
Oh, I know. I played other sports.
True. Yeah.
And so I like sports. Like I like to be active at like team games. It's just fun. I miss, you know, chirping and just yelling loudly for whatever reason and the physicality of it. So for years, like it's a small town, right? So everybody talks. And for years, you're walking around the neighborhood and people are going, when are you going to join the Sunday night league? When are you going to join mom's hockey? And like, okay, yeah, someday. I've never played. And they're like, doesn't matter. Like it's hockey. You'll pick it up. You'll be fine. And like, really? So I went to Source for Sports and that guy suited me all up and yeah, I just joined finally after 2 years, I think, of other women bothering me to play. Don't worry that you've never played, they said. It'll be easy. I've never even skated in like the black skates before. I'd always had figure skates growing up. So, of course, I'm like super nervous. But it was fine. It was good. I could still stop and turn and somewhat could handle the puck with my stick, and I'm a lot better now. It's been a few years in, but it's funny because there's women in this town that have lived there all their lives and they have played hockey. Like, we've had a few players play U of M, and one was Team Manitoba Ringette, and they still come on Sunday nights and play with me, like with me, who doesn't play hockey, well, who never did, and has only been playing for 4 years or so. And we mix up the teams every Sunday. So, like, you know, 20 girls or 15 girls on this team and 18 girls on this team. And there you go. So you just bring your two jerseys and whatever you get doled out is your color that Sunday. But to play with like ex U of M players, like I'm in awe every time I'm on that ice. And just like, you girls are amazing. And they're so awesome. Like, I'm not great. I'm not a U of M player. I'm not a Team Manitoba player, and they don't care. And we don't care. Like, I think I look stupid sometimes next to them, right? They're just like so finessed and it's just easy. It looks easy. Everything they do, from turning to puck handling, like I'm blown away. And I just love that no matter your player or ability level or experience, nobody cares. They think everyone's great and they all just have a really great time. Yeah. It's just an excellent, a really great place for women to go play hockey, I'd say.
What position do you play? There's probably the biggest question of all.
Okay. So you just kind of shimmy down the bench until after a minute or two. And then you just get out there and they just yell at you, center, defense. I'm like, okay. And then you just run, you just skate out there and you do your thing and you hope you're doing it right. No, the girls, again, the ones that have played like X-Bisons and stuff, they're such good little coaches. We're like, you need to be a little bit over here. Oh no, that's offside. No, back you get. And they yell at you, offside. I'm like, just have to learn all that. I know it all now. And I do watch a lot of Jets games and stuff. So I know a thing or two about hockey, but it's just a very fun atmosphere.
They've never asked you to strap on the pads.
Leave?
No, not leave. No, okay, come on now. They've never asked you to strap on the pads though? You want to try a round in net for...
Oh. You know? Goodness, do I want to be tortured? That, like, nope, I'm good. We do have one girl, one mom in town. She's a goalie, and it's funny because she's 6 foot or 6 foot one, and then she puts on the goalie stuff, and she just like dominates that net. Wow. And she does such a great job. And then for other years, we've had some girls come and go, but I guess we're all just too chicken to try goalie. And so we actually have one of the dads in town that comes every Sunday. So we call it the Hockey Moms League, and the one dad, and he comes and plays net for us, and he's wonderful.
That's awesome. I gotta ask, because I mean, I think that this is something, and I don't know if anybody's aware of this, and I certainly think that maybe more people would be aware of, or should be aware of this, maybe not would be aware of this, but there's a memorial fund that actually is attached to, I guess, the Winter Carnival that I should have mentioned earlier, but the Taylor Christensen Memorial Fund, which allows two kids every year to go to a hockey school of their choice. It's an important sort of piece to, you know, keeping kids in hockey and certainly allowing kids to get better. How did that get started? Because I think there's a tragic story, but there's also some really good that came out of it.
Yeah. So that's a family that just lives down the street from me, actually, the Christensens. That would have been 20 years ago about. I'm trying to think of the year Taylor passed away. So he was a Timbit at the time, and it was this was his first year in hockey. And he actually was on the ice at our arena playing hockey, and his heart stopped working. So he actually passed away in the arena. We've got a huge memorial set up for him, his brother and sister. So they would be his younger brother and sister now. Sam actually babysits my kids, and she's got to be 22 now. So this must've been 25 years ago. I think he would have turned 25 this year, Taylor. Okay. And then Dayton is younger than Sam. Anyway, fantastic family, all about hockey, giving back to the community. They wanted to have Taylor's legacy live on, and they have this fund, the Taylor Christensen Fund. And during the carnival every year, we do a 50-50 at every single game that's played in honor of Taylor. And we take the funds that go from that plus funds that the family has donated and raised. And we send two players in the Minor Hockey Association, whoever's name gets drawn, they get to go to a hockey school of their choice, which is amazing. Yeah. It's such an emotional game every year when they do the draws of the game and his sister plays, his brother, I think he must be Bantam now. And that game is the official Taylor Christensen Memorial game, whichever team Dayton is playing for. So it changes every year, and it's such a special day. And it just means a lot to the whole town. This is such a small town, just how everybody supports one another and unites over a common cause. And it just is so amazing. Like I feel so blessed to still know that family, and that I get Sam to influence my kids, and she now works at the daycare in town and just gets to, you know, be an awesome supporter and encourager of other kids. And it's just a lovely story, even though it came from such tragedy.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly the thing, is that, I mean, again, nobody, you know, nobody ever wants to see something like that happen. And, but the fact that, you know, Taylor's memory now has helped so many kids, mm-hmm. and certainly so many people mm-hmm. find a lot of good, I mean, is really a good way to honor Taylor. And I think that's a fantastic story. And like I said, I had no idea that it even happened. I knew there was a Winter Carnival out there. I had no idea there was an actual day and a game, you know, specifically to, you know, have all of the St. Adolph teams play on the same day, and then mm-hmm. have one specific game where, you know, where Taylor gets to sort of be the focal point of the
star,
you know,
yeah.
for everything. So that's so good. And I mean, like you said, I mean, it takes a real community to sort of pull that together. And I'm glad that everybody sort of found some good in that. So,
mm-hmm. yeah.
You guys have the St. Adolph Hawks Junior C team that plays in the Hanover Taché League out there.
That's right. Got them back too this year, yeah, right? Like they weren't playing there for a few years, and then we set it all up this year. Super pumped to have the Junior C's back. We're selling season's tickets. Everything's going well. Boom, COVID hits. Boom, Ice Plant dies. Okay, so right. Now we're down to.
So I was gonna say, I mean, it seems like everything's on the up and up, and all of a sudden, just, you know, the bottom falls out on everything for the Hawks. I mean, what's knock on wood, in a perfect world, October rolls around, everything comes back. I mean, you know, I'll ask you straight up, how's the team look? I mean, you guys are gonna, I guess,
better
gonna
dominate
the league.
Yeah, that's right. I just rolled over my season's tickets for the Junior C, so there they better come back and play here in October. yeah, you keep that money. They're gonna be back. I know it. That's of course our like primary goal right now. Let's get the ice going, because this is ridiculous. We have so many people that just want to be back on the ice. We used to have Ringette too in town, and they went to St. Agathe. They had to go to another town.
Oh, geez.
Just lots of people waiting. We got to need those grandpas back on the ice too. They're lovely. They play weekdays when everyone's at school and work, right?
Yeah.
They come, and anyone who's off can come too. So it's not just the grandpas, like some other ages, like grandkids will come and play with their grandpas. It's adorable. And then after, they ask the rink manager, is there anything that needs to be fixed? And they like trade ice time for fixing pieces and maintaining the arena for us. They'll like, you know, this is leaking or we need to replace this. They'll bring their toolboxes to hockey and they'll fix the, like, it's just so cute. It's just such a cute little community.
That is awesome, actually, that, you know, that everybody sort of gets to come out and play, you know, no matter what age, no matter what skill level, everybody sort of playing there during the day, which is kind of great. One of the players that's come out of St. Adolph, and I'm certain you being a teacher probably know her very well, Avery Pickering. She's a defender with Balmoral Hall and played at the Rink Academy for a while. Looks like there's going to be a bright future for her. What can you tell us about Avery a little bit?
Well, actually, she also lives down the street from me.
Oh, well, there you go.
I only ever see her at her younger, she's two younger brothers, and I see her at the youngest game because he's similar in age to my son and he has actually played on his team before. So I see Avery just coming to cheer on her brother. Super dedicated to hockey, hard working family. It's not just Avery, like Owen has been drafted to, I don't want to mess up the team. I can't remember the league. I don't know if it's like the Ontario Hockey League or you'll have to look him up. But
okay.
Her younger brother, Owen Pickering, just got drafted to something or other.
Swift Current Broncos.
Thank you.
There you go.
Look at how fast you are. Okay. So that's like fantastic news. Bright future for Avery, who's, she'll give you a run for your money. I know that because I've got some of my friend's kids who play on a team with her and they're like, she's like our best player. And these are all the boys saying this. I'm like, yeah, she is. She's awesome. And then her brother, Owen, also great hockey player. And then they've got their little brother, Graham, who's only 11, all of 11. And oh my goodness, like he is going to be a force to be reckoned with as well. I've had the most exposure to him because he's similar to my son's age. I've seen him in action. And the other two are anything like the 11-year-old, oh my goodness, just so much talent in hockey. So watch out for the Pickering kids. Their names will be out there soon enough.
For those that are asking, Owen, who is playing currently actually with Swift Current, 15 games, one goal, 4 assists this year. Yeah. So that's where he was at the rink last year and before that and blah, 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 blah.
So Eastman, this is his first
Eastman
year.
Selects
so
as well.
We have the AA Eastman Selects 13 under 13 U out of our arena as well, but not right now.
Yeah, not right now, unfortunately. You're right. Yeah. But yeah, no, yeah. I mean, Owen is a giant too, 6'3", plays defense. Wow. So good for him. Congratulations on making this for Queer and Broncos. And like I said, from the way it looks like, I mean, Avery has a bright future ahead of her as well. So hopefully, I mean, everybody gets from the Pickering family ends up, you know, getting to where they need to get with hockey, because that sounds like they're a dedicated bunch. That's for sure.
Yes. That's a very dedicated family. There's been other girls that have come out of our arena too. We've got some Olympic medalists like Bailey Bram and Jocelyn Bodock.
Yeah.
Were out of our arena for years.
I think Bailey and them played in Eastman as well, didn't they? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's and great. Shelby Bram as well from Eastman, who went on and played pro hockey in NWHL is where she played. So, I mean, there's lots of kids out of that. I mean, Reagan Kirk, who's now playing for Robert Morris, is an outstanding player for them as well, and she's goaltender. And I mean, there's been lots of kids that come through that have come through that Eastman program. So yeah, you guys probably have seen a lot of great players come through St. Adolph, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a special place.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the important stuff. One of the other things I was going to ask about, because I was reading the Amelia sort of drive for some money, and so if you guys want to replace both the Zamboni and the score clock, are you guys looking at old Zamboni, old score clock as well?
Oh, yeah. We also don't really have a sound system.
Oh.
So, like, we want music. It's just this crackly, very outdated technology. You're looking at the plugs going, is that even made anymore? Like, how do I fit my iPhone into this whole system? You can't. Like, nothing works. The score clock is the original. It was donated originally back in 1992. And it works half the time. So we're like playing and then we're like, how many minutes are left for it? That says 8888. Oh, it broke again. Like it's frustrating, the score clock. It's frustrating to work. It's very old technology and it shorts out. And then we've got our Zamboni, which is, they keep saying on the fritz, like it's past its expiry date. I guess Zambonis have like an expiry date. So the rink manager tells me, yeah, we're kind of, it's on its last legs. Great. So we have a lot of things that need help.
So our arena. I'll give you this as well. I know I gave you the update before. I just refreshed because I was interested. 24 donations now at $4,735. So,
oh wow!
So somebody's dumping money into that Amelia. And I mean, that's fantastic. Yes. Like that's great to see everybody doing that. So let's hope we can get some more people there. I'll put that link up on the site and certainly tweet it out to everybody as well, so everybody gets the information out there and understands what's going on with you guys. So yeah, so we'll make sure that gets out there for sure, and everybody knows what's happening there. I mean, to be honest, Lori, I mean, you've pretty much run down the entire setup here. I mean, we're gonna keep you on if you want to stay on for the rest. You want to stay on for the next half hour of the show, because we got some stuff we can go over for some crazy news stories if you want to comment on them.
Oh, fun. I have to actually
We'll make you the co-host today if you want.
Fun. Okay.
All right, let's do this then. So I mean, again, if you're looking to help out, check the link. It's amelia.com, and we'll put that up on Hockey Blog in Canada. We'll put that up on umfm.com. We'll put that up on Twitter as well through my Twitter account. Make sure everybody gets an idea to go there. If you have a little bit of cash left over from whatever you're doing, throw some money at St. Adolph for sure, because they can use that. And anything $50 and over is tax deductible as well. So if you want to make want to make a donation and save yourself a little bit of government money next year, do that. That would be good. So there's a way to beat the government. So nice setup on that. Let's get into some craziness here, because we reported this last week, and certainly you as a teacher, Lori, can probably comment on knowing a little bit about too close for comfort when it comes to COVID. But last week, we reported that five teams in Quebec, in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, had been told to quarantine, stay off the ice, don't come back until things get better. Of those, it was basically Gatineau and Quebec that had been told you have positive cases. Gatineau had 11, Quebec had 4 at that point. Three other teams, Blainville, Boisbriand, who were the other two, Baie-Comeau and Rimouski, had been in contact with those teams and were told basically stay away. As of today, there are 24 cases with the Gatineau Olympique organization, players and staff. There are 2 with the Blainville organization, and there are 7 with Quebec, as this just keeps getting worse and worse for Quebec. I mean, we've seen how fast this spreads and we've seen how fast this goes. And obviously, you know, we don't want to see anything get worse, but the QMJHL came out and said that this actual situation doesn't interfere with the league's objectives to begin the 2021 President Cup playoffs on April 23rd. I don't know how it doesn't when you have five teams that have been told they can't play.
Yeah, like, let's take a page out of the Vancouver Canucks book there. Like, how long are they off for, and how are they going to make up those games, and how does the Quebec League think this is going to run?
Right, exactly. Like, I mean, you have 24 cases with one team. I just go, that's the entire team plus extras. Like, you don't even have a team at that point.
No.
So unless Gatineau's not going to make the playoffs, maybe that's the idea, that they're so far out that they're not going to, it doesn't matter whether they come back or not. But you expect that one of those other four teams probably does have some impact on them, but I guess it doesn't. I don't know.
Strange. Well, I guess we'll see it all play out. What happens?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the next sort of big thing, I guess. The other big story that came out of Canada this week, came out of news this week, was the problems at Laurentian University in Sudbury, Ontario. I don't know if you've read anything about this, Laurie, but this is, I don't know any other word than baffling that would sort of make up the difference here as to what's going on in Laurentian. According to news reports, Laurentian University applied for creditor protection after court documents showed that it would not have been able to continue operations through to the end of February, including making payroll without court intervention. It sounds like everything is being cut there. They cut 100 professors. They cut 58 undergraduate programs and 11 graduate programs in order to shore up the offerings so that they aren't basically spending as much money as they have to. They already cut the swimming team, and it sounds like the hockey teams, both men and women's, are next.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. From an education standpoint, I mean, obviously that's terrible. And I mean, there's all sorts of programs that are included in there. Like, they're cutting the entire math department, the entire physics department, and the entire music department, which makes me question.
There's just like basket weaving left, or like, what's going on?
That's the thing. Are you even a university if you don't offer the cornerstones of like what society is built on? But I mean, okay, whatever.
And are they citing like COVID is the main reason for like, they just haven't rolled with the punches and pivoted their campus the way other people have? Is this?
No. Why? So here's the problem, is that they have had basically what I'm going to call woeful mismanagement of finances for the last number of years. According to the Globe and Mail, Joe Friesen of the Globe and Mail, who wrote on April 11th, he wrote, and I quote, "It has debts of nearly $100 million from a building spree that didn't produce enrollment gains, and it ran deficits in the range of $2 to $5 million a year for several years, according to its court filings. It also spent millions in grants earmarked for research just to keep the lights on, owing in part to the practice of having just one bank account where incoming funds from various sources were mixed." So basically, an administration kind of just threw all the money together that they were receiving and said, just spend it on whatever we have to and don't worry about what it's meant for.
Yeah, no future planning involved.
Right. And then go ahead and expand like crazy. And
they bit off more than they can chew. Oh, no.
Right. As it stands right now, their enrollment number is about 6,000 students, which is the same number of students that the school had in 2007. So we're talking about error upon mistake upon problem. And I mean, I'm not here to criticize, but we're seeing it kind of with our provincial government, that, you know, school divisions are being changed and money is being moved around from this, that, and the other. I mean, from an education standpoint alone, this sounds like a complete failure on Laurentian's part, does it not?
Yeah. I don't know much about how they get organized but what are these 6,000 students supposed to do? This was supposed to be their graduate degree,
undergraduate and graduate degrees, yeah,
but not in math or science or swimming.
none of that stuff. No.
Oh my goodness.
So there's one girl who's coming in to play women's hockey, who was recruited to come and play at the school from London, Ontario.
And just kidding, says the university.
The course that she wanted to take was one of the ones that's cut. Like, you haven't even got to the school and you don't have a future, is basically what Laurentian is telling her.
Wow.
And I look at this and I go, how can this happen in today's day and age? How can this happen and not be noticed by anybody over the course of a number of years? I don't get it. I don't understand how this works. According to the Toronto Star, the school is in debt to the tune of some $300 million, with the school owing three banks $91 million. like this, wow. You might as well just close the doors at this point. I don't know how and you make up
6,000 students are out of luck.
Yeah. Wow. But I don't know how you make up $300 million in debt. Like, I don't know how that works in terms of a university. There's no way that, at least I think there's no way that a school can fall that far into debt and dig their way out. But
I can't think of another time in my lifetime when a school has, I guess, messed up so badly that they've had to close their doors. Like, I can't think of another college or university that has. Yeah, that's a pretty big deal.
As written in the CBC, they are the first public university to basically go under creditor protection. So
and that'd be why I've never heard of another
that's
one.
That's probably why you've never heard of another one. Yeah, yep. But like I said, I don't understand. And I mean, it affects people more than I think that, again, we're talking about 100 professors. We're talking about, you know, and they said it's only going to be 10% of their student population. But I go 10% of 6,000 is still 600 people that are affected. Like, that's not a small number.
And where is Laurentian in Ontario? But is it?
Yeah, Sudbury, Ontario. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like of those 600, how many are actually from Sudbury? Like, this is going to mean a move out back to wherever they came from. Like, it would be, a university that would draw from far away, right?
It's, and they do.
Like, UT, there's people that live in Toronto and they go to UT and that's that. But like, people are going to be coming and like living on campus, renting apartments just to go to that school, because it's not like it's a pretty big city, but it's not a Toronto. It's not a Montreal. Like,
but it's the biggest university basically in Northern Ontario is how they're positioned anyway.
Oh, wow.
Bryn O'Dwyer calls Alberta home. So she's playing on the women's hockey team. She calls Alberta home. They have a first-year forward, Chihiro Suzuki, who came from Japan to play hockey there.
Oh, my goodness. So, and I'm just thinking Canadians happen to be displaced. Never mind, international. That's,
On the men's side, they have guys from all over the place. Nova Scotia, Quebec, Illinois, New York, Michigan, British Columbia. Like, it doesn't really, I mean, and I know these guys are used to moving because they've played in, you know, the OHL or the QMJHL or the WHL. Like, they're used to moving around, but you expect to get to university and not have to worry about that anymore. But I guess that's not going to happen, because as we've seen, you know, it's hockey's kind of the most expensive sport there is, and cutting that seems to really be the low hanging fruit for most of these. And I get that there's a deficit, but schools have recruited these players to come there. You're asking these players to come to your school. The last thing you should be doing is cutting their programs.
Yeah, maybe miscommunication between the allocation of funds people and then the other program people, because I'm sure the people who recruited them feel just terrible. I'm sorry, I brought you all the way over here from such and such a place, and now actually we're not going to have hockey. That's got to be hard. And so many mixed feelings, and there's probably so many hurt feelings amongst staff members, and that would be tough.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I look at that and I just go, I don't know how you ever pick up the pieces if you're a tenured university professor there, and you're, you know, and again, I'm not trying to make, you know, make light of older professors, but if you're, you know, 45, 50 year old professor, you have nothing now.
And you've probably been so proud and put your heart and soul into this place to work, and now it's just like, nope, see ya, we're going to cut your job because we screwed up.
Right. Aww. And that's where I just go, this is just a debacle all the way around. Like, there's no, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, this is terrible. So, I mean,
not that it's due to COVID, but it feels like par for the course for this year.
I guess things
coming out of left field. Oh, look at that. Now we don't have a university anymore. Right. Oh, look at that. Like, just.
But I guess that's kind of the last straw, right? Like, I mean, that's really what triggered this, because they had no money coming. I mean, they had very little money coming in because everything shut down. And then that was kind of we can't hide
the
straw
that broke the camel's back. Yeah. Aww. That's too bad.
So, I mean, I just feel bad about that in terms of the whole setup, but what can you do, I guess?
Oh, better come to U of W or U of M, I guess. Brandon, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, it's few and far, but I guess Nipissing would be the closest one to them. They're in the Sault Ste. Marie area. So maybe that would be the closest one they go to. But again, if you're playing hockey, like, those recruiting positions are already full. Like, there's nowhere for you to go and play hockey now. And that's the problem, is that with teams being cut, and we saw that happen in Lethbridge, there's nowhere for these women and for these men to go, because everybody's got a full roster already. And with the year off, we're already talking about next year's recruits coming in as well. Like, everybody's already recruiting already. So, I mean, COVID's kind of put the kibosh on everything.
How long did hockey players play for this year, like university teams? Did COVID affect them as much as it did the public? Because, you know, the NHL is still going.
Did not play a game.
So if you were recruited, and you know how they have like a lifetime, like you can only play on this team for 3 years kind of thing, like, does this year count for those kids, I wonder? Like,
this year for eligibility does not count, because there's no the way that U Sports looks at it is that if there is no national championship offered by U Sports, it doesn't count against the year of eligibility. Because there was
not great.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I think that's great for the girls and boys that are playing on university level teams, and they get an extra year essentially to keep doing what they love. But then that really messes it up for the year following, who are awaiting their turn, right? Like, there's usually a turnaround, and now it's like one more year they'll have to wait and compete with the next ones coming up. Like, it does kind of, it creates a backlog, right, of the people who want to be recruited. And that's really tough.
There's a catch there, though, because, I mean, school didn't end for these kids either, right? So they all went to university in terms of being virtual classes, which means that some of them are going to graduate now with a degree, and they have to come back and fill, because there's an education requirement for student athletes in U Sports, they'd have to fill 18 credit hours in order for them to fulfill one more year of hockey if they wanted to come back and play in some sort of graduate program. And if you're doing 1 year in graduate program, do I really want to do a graduate program? Because I don't really want, I just want to kind of get on with my life sort of thing. So
we're seeing
the back and forth right now, where students are like, those fifth year students that are not playing this year are really weighing the options and going, is there a future here for me at the school? And if there's not, well, then I guess I don't play my fifth year. Like, I'm done.
Yeah.
And there's a number of players. And again, we spoke to a few of them earlier on the, you know, in the year, and one of them on this show, like, some of them have applied to med school. Some of them have applied written their LSATs to go to law school. Like, they're like, life doesn't stop just because you can't play hockey. And that's where they're going, well, like, I can't play if I'm in med school, like, I'm going to be way too busy. And yeah, I just go like, this is such a terrible thing to say, but like, yeah, like, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a tough situation for everybody, I think, because there's not really a right answer, and there's certainly not a wrong answer. I mean, if you want to come back and play, I don't think any of the coaches would complain, but it, like you said, it just makes it way harder now, because you're going to have basically a press box full of about, you know, 8 to 10 players that may never see the ice this year.
Oh, sad.
And that's, and again, they, if they're redshirting, it backs everybody up again, because redshirting doesn't take a year off your eligibility. And then, yeah. And then the whole cycle starts over again. So it's just a mess. And I feel for these coaches, because they got to figure out what to do with this, but it's not going to be easy to make everybody happy. That's the thing. So
yeah. I got to ask you, you seem really interested in all aspects of hockey, whether professional sports, amateur sports, university sports, like mom's leagues. And you don't play yourself right now, but how did you come to like love this sport and want to report on it? And you're very good at researching and understanding the details of different stories and just, yeah, all hockey all the time. So how come?
I ironically, nobody's ever asked me that on the show, which is kind of funny, but I'll give you the insider scoop then. The idea was never to be, again, we don't want to be a Dateline. We're not 60 Minutes. We're not going to ever do the hard investigative journalism. We want to have fun. We want to have a laugh on this show. And we certainly want to talk about things that are relevant, you know, in the current sort of scope of hockey. That being said, though, there are things that I like about hockey more than, I've always been a student of the game. Love watching the game, love breaking down the plays, love, you know, being sort of into that idea. I got started because I read a blog, and I got asked to sort of transfer that to the radio, and it's sort of successfully done that, kind of. And then it got deeper and deeper in that I got asked to do some color analyst work on Bison men's hockey, and asked the question, why is it that Bison women's hockey isn't on the radio? And that kind of turned into its own thing, where not only is Bison women's hockey on the radio, but we're kind of running with it and making it better every year, which is part of the fun. Nice. So
yeah.
I think the idea is that I was never really much for whatever. Anybody can throw a body check. Anybody can score a goal if they're in the right place, right time, and have the right skills. I get that. But seeing it all come together, seeing five players work together, seeing how it looks on the ice when everything works really well, was always something that just fascinated me. And I think that's where my love of hockey came from, is that I'll be the first to admit that I'll never be able to skate as fast as McDavid. I never was able to skate that fast, and seeing him do the things that he does at his speed.
Maybe Ehlers though.
I mean, in my mind, I was Connor. Probably that in my mind, I was that fast, but I was never, I mean, on ice, it was like, okay, is this like put me
in slow motion?
Literally had to put it on fast forward for me to look like regular speed. So I look at that and I go, like, to see these kids coming up, to see sort of the next generation coming up and do the things that they do. I mean, from the Gretzky's to the Lemieux to, you know, the players that I've witnessed over my time go from being, you know, the most dominant players to seeing the next sort of wave of dominant players. That's where I look at it and I go, man, hockey's changed so much in the last 15, 20, 30 years. And
oh yeah,
every year there's something different, something new, something great that you just go, I'd never seen that before. That's fantastic. I mean, take the Michigan goal. Everybody talks about, you know, the stick handling alone that these guys can do, and then to be able to work lacrosse moves into a hockey game.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, the lacrosse move. Oh.
Exactly. You kind of go like, man, like that's something that I would have never even dreamed of when I was on the rink, let alone
seeing some of these guys do it now. Through the legs too, like behind them right. And through their own legs. I'm like, what? How do you, I can't, no.
Like I would have tripped. I'm not going to lie. I would have tripped myself. Like I would have been flat out in the corner at that point. So yeah.
Oh. It's pretty, and I often, like, you know how they show the old games from the 70s or 80s,
pixelated
and whatever because that was the cameras of the time, but it's like a Saturday afternoon and there's some Detroit versus Montreal game on the TV from 1978, nobody's wearing helmets, the goalie barely has any padding, and
right, yeah,
and I just think if we were to, like, you know, transfer McDavid or those kind of players from today, or what's his name, Ovechkin, and then just like put them back in 1978, oh my goodness, could you imagine? They would just light it up, like just the way hockey is now, how it's grown, like you were saying, how it's changed throughout the years. It would just be so interesting to see, or even when I was a kid, you know, watching Wendell Clark and Felix Potvin and those kind of players, and then putting them against McDavid, like it would just be so neat to watch. Or even Gretzky, like how would Gretzky fare now?
Like, that's the thing. I look at it now and I go, like, you, again, name the players you've named, I mean, Ovechkins and the Crosbys and those guys, you kind of go, like, those guys didn't exist back then. Like, they didn't have those giant tree trunks of legs. They were that, you know, you can't move those guys off the puck. It was more freewheeling, have fun, and, you know, dish the puck off and away you go. And I mean, Gretzky to Curry is, you know, was as common that, you know, as anything else that day, because, I mean, you know, Curry scored 70 goals. Gretzky had 200 some odd points. Sure, we'll never see that again, but I don't think we'll ever see, you know, guys looking like that again either. And that's where I go, the game has changed and evolved and so much. And I mean, I'll even go back just to women's hockey and go, like, the 1990 World Championship, like, they allowed women to literally body check. Like, body checking was allowed, and it was stopped because of how big the Canadian and American women were compared to the European women. And that's the basically the main reason why there's no body checking in women's hockey.
Wow.
And I go,
body checking.
For people that don't understand, there is still tons of body contact in women's hockey. And it's certainly trending more towards seeing more body contact, not in that, you know, there are giant open ice hits or guys are getting crushed or women are getting crushed along the boards. But I look at it and I go, it's a much more simplistic game in that it's based on skill and speed most of the time. Like, you can't intimidate a team into folding like the Broad Street Bullies used to do it. It's literally, if you have Hillary Knight on one side and Marie-Philippe Poulin on the other side, like, there's no advantage there. Like, both are super skilled, both are super good, and both are going to go down to the wire to score goals. And you go, okay, like, that's awesome. Like, there's no intimidation fear. There's no, you know, one person that can give somebody else an edge unless you have a fairly stacked team. And I love that about women's hockey because it's so pure to the skill and the way that
the teamwork. Oh my goodness.
Right. Yeah. Like, there's so much more team involvement on like you don't see the end-to-end rushes as often because it requires a couple of players usually to help out and open up ice for you. And I love that about the women's game because everybody gets to touch the puck.
Yeah.
So that's my.
If I can touch the puck when I play.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was gonna say I'm not gonna. I mean, I'm the same way. I was like, I'm usually the guy that just gives it to somebody who can skate better. So there you go. I'm out.
Yeah, or carry the puck even.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm skating and I'm like, where'd the puck go? Oh, that's man, totally. I had good. It a second ago.
But I mean, that's where it comes from, is that I like that that aspect of watching sort of this magic in motion when you sort of get to and for us calling buys and games, again, we're up higher, we get to see everything sort of happen in motion. But when you see everybody sort of involved in a play, you go like, that is why this game is so good.
Yeah.
So that's where it comes from, is I'm much like watching the games and studying it and learning.
Oh, that's just really cool.
Yeah, just how the game works a lot. So that's what I like. Before we get out of here, Lori, though, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We usually do some fun, goofy questions. Do you want to do those right now?
Heck yeah, I do.
Okay, fun, goofy questions are always good. They're super softball questions. You don't have to worry about answering too many hard questions. But let's start with an easy one. What number do you choose to wear, or what number would you like to wear if you were given the opportunity?
I would like to wear 13. It's a lucky number. It's my daughter's favorite number, and she was born on the 13th. But well, I just get stuck with whatever jersey I get, so I'm 16 right now. <That's> okay, I don't complain. I just want to play hockey. Just put whatever on me.
That's all right. Favorite team? I mean, you can name anybody from St. Adolph if you want, but favorite NHL team? We'll start with that one.
It's the Winnipeg Jets. I live in Winnipeg.
Okay.
I grew up in Ontario, though, and so it was the Toronto Maple Leafs. My sister across the hallway was the Montreal Canadiens, so that was a big rivalry right across the hall in our own house. And in the bathroom, we would constantly fight. I'd be putting up Felix Potvin posters, and she'd be putting up, Patrick Waugh probably was her goalie, and we'd fight. And so we'd come in the morning, and Felix would be gone, and there'd be some stupid Montreal Canadian goalie there. And I'd take it down, and I'd put him back up. So we were always fighting over the Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens in our bathroom.
That's fantastic. Now that you're a Jets fan, biggest rival that you see the Jets have?
So biggest rival?
Biggest rival that you think. Like, if there's a team that you would like to see them play,
I know that this isn't everyone's answer, but every time I feel like they play Calgary, I feel like it's a really good game. I don't know. I really enjoy watching it. I feel like they're not evenly matched every time, but there's just something about the way that they play and show up when they play each other that I really enjoy watching them play Calgary. Of course, the Leafs, because I have to make fun of my entire family back in Ontario.
Sure, yeah.
And it's fun, though, right? Like, it's fun to have something during COVID, like, okay, good, there's a Jets game tonight, and then just to bug your family if they're playing the Leafs. It's been a real positive bright light having the NHL still going, even though I know it's difficult for them.
Yeah.
It's been awesome.
Toughest question of the evening probably for you. What's the one thing you've learned the most since starting playing hockey? What's the one either skill or the one lesson you've learned from playing hockey?
I don't have a toe pick anymore, so don't rely on that,
get that.
When you're skating. dear. Wow. Just the camaraderie amongst hockey players. Like, just when you're on the ice or even on the bench, or even in the training room, like, people just are, they're fun. We're loud. I've learned so much of how to play the sport from these girls. It was just fun to actually learn about icing and offsides when you're actually on the ice. Like, 'cause when you're watching a game and you just ask somebody, like, what's icing? And then they tell you, and you're like, okay, I think I kind of get it. But to actually play it now, it's been really cool to learn the hockey rules from a player's standpoint. I never thought I would get to. So this has been a really awesome bonus in my life, getting to actually play a sport that I never learned when I was younger, and then getting to experience hockey from the ice level. That's really cool.
That is a cool way to experience it, for sure. I'm going to give you the soapbox for now then, Lori. You got the last couple of minutes of the show here. Anything you want to say, anything you want to get out, any news you want to pass on to anybody, the floor is yours if you want to use it for any means.
Wow, thanks. I don't know, just basically thanks to everybody who was behind St. Adolph for Craft Hockeyville. I love that it really united families and neighbors and the whole province. And I just encourage everybody out there just to get involved. Get involved with your community, with your neighbors, lend a helping hand. It's an awesome opportunity to meet people and just to help out your fellow neighbor. And it's been an awesome just team building experience. Yeah. And if anybody has any funds or what's the COVID called that everybody's getting, the CERB or whatever? What's
the CERB,
it
called? Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Wondering what to do with that money, maybe. Just maybe go to Amelia and give it to the St. Adolph Community Club and Arena. Even like $5, whatever you want. Just donate some money to that if you want to see some good Junior C hockey back on the ice, or the Eastman Selects having a home to practice in again, or even just some hockey moms on Sunday nights. We appreciate it.
If you got any pennies to spare, go to amelia.com. Again, check Hockey Blogging Canada and or umfm.com for that information on the Hockey Show page. We'll get that information up there as well. Lori, it has been phenomenal talking to you. Fun to certainly learn about everything that's going on in St. Adolphin. We'll keep an eye on everything. By all means, we want to come out. Nice. We'll meet everybody out in St. Adolphin. We'll have some fun with that for sure. So
we are a hockey town. You would not be disappointed. It'll be very fun.
Excited. Perfect. For it. Ladies and gentlemen, Lori Stoddy, if you guys are looking for any information on St. Adolphin, again, follow their social media. I will post all of that on Hockey Blog Canada and umfm.com. With that, folks, we're out of here for another week. I want to thank Lori Stoddy from St. Adolphin and all the people that put in some hard work for Hockeyville. You guys made us all proud here in Manitoba. We'll get out there as soon as we can, and we'll see you guys once the pandemic stuff blows over and gets by us. So stay tuned for that, everybody. Also, stay tuned for Skippy on Free Range Radio coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. With that, we're out of here for another week. We'll see you next Thursday, everybody. Have a good one. You're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 in Winnipeg.